Chapter 5. Nameless flew over our heads as we rode out of the gates of Bastionville at a slow crawl, but as the walls of the town faded into the background, we began to pick up our pace. It was the first time I'd led an entourage of this size, and it took a little getting used to for everyone involved. Then it began to take a while for the line of carriages to pull out from behind the walls, and I started to worry we wouldn't reach Carleone in a day. It usually took about half a day of hard riding to reach the next closest holding to Bastionville, but I had every intention of making it in one day with the caravan of carriages and soldiers. The terrain was quiet, and the woods shaded the road from the heat of the sun, but the celestial orb was climbing quickly through the sky. Around high noon was the worst, and the resulting snowmelt caused the path to turn muddy. A carriage wheel was stuck in a rut more than once, and I made a mental note to improve the quality of the roads once I returned from this quest. After the completion of my castle, I could send the masons on to a lot of other needed tasks, like stone walls and paved roads. My territory would surely thrive even more with better roads, and I wanted to make sure Bastionville was the safest place in Soreal. I was eager to see the fruits of my labors, but building things with stone took time, and I reminded myself to be patient.
"Sir, when would you like to stop for the day?"
Bryandale asked as he entered the carriage while it was still in motion.
"The tail will need a few hours to catch up to us."
"I aimed to reach Carleone tonight. You think we can make it?"
"I'll signal for an increase to our pace, sir,"
the general said, and he jumped out of the carriage a moment later. He hit the ground at a jog, but I saw him riding to the front of the procession on his horse a few seconds later. The man was a beast and a glutton for hard work.
"I hope we make it to Carleone tonight,"
Eva said.
"I don't exactly miss sleeping on a bedroll."
The Duke's daughter looked a little pale, but she was still in the early stages of her pregnancy, and I was sure the movement of the carriage wasn't the most pleasant sensation for her.
"There will be plenty of that once we hit the desert,"
Mahini assured the blonde bombshell. The desert goddess smirked, and Eva rolled her eyes, but I merely chuckled and returned my gaze to the carriage window. I wasn't used to riding in a box. Neither was Nameless. The small iridescent dragon perched as close to the window as he could, and he stared out the glass with wide, starry eyes. He was too little to fly all day long, but I let him out regularly to stretch his wings.
"I am looking forward to seeing more of your holdings, Bash,"
Zenda said.
"How often do you visit Corleone?"
When I'm home?" I shrugged. "Every few weeks. The mayor is like an uncle to Alyssa, so we try to visit Carleone often, but I still manage to balance my time between all four holdings."
"We will pass through your town of Ivywood as well, correct?"
Zenda's sapphire eyes sparkled with curiosity.
"I have heard they have a beautiful forest surrounding their town."
"Yeah. Oh, they're known for their high-quality timber. Carleone's main resource is another copper mine, but Windvale also trades in lumber."
"Plenty of resources close by for anything you need?"
The historian agreed with a brisk nod.
"The only thing you're lacking is a source for stone."
"Oh, trust me, I'm well aware. The copper mines produce enough to trade for as much stone as I could ask for, but it would be a lot easier if one of my holdings produced it themselves." It was several hours later when the front of our procession spotted the walls of Carleone, but my wives and I decided to walk to the gate so we could greet Mayor Carlisle in person. Nameless flapped into the sky from my shoulder, and he circled overhead while we crossed the distance to the mayor. I had a letter from Alyssa and Elrin in my pants pocket to give to the older man, and he embraced me in a warm hug as soon as I was within arm's reach.
"Great one!" Carlisle smiled wide. "How does the God of Time fare these days?"
"I'm doing well, Uncle Carl." I chuckled, and I clapped the man on the shoulder as we parted from our embrace. "Working hard as usual, but I couldn't pass up the chance to come say hello. How are things around here? Any problems I can help with while I'm in town?"
"Always,"
Carlisle said with a sad shake of his head.
"Nothing beats the word of a god when trying to talk sense into people." I've got some that have been waiting to see you since the last time you were here. But I hate to steal you away from your quest.
Now we can spare some time to make sure everything's good here. What kind of ruler would I be if I didn't handle things when I could?
Not the great one you are, that's for sure.
Carlyle agreed, and his smile turned into a thin white line.
We are certainly grateful for the help. There's been a scourge of sickness going around, and I'm afraid the mine is beginning to suffer. Several workers are home in bed, and outputs are dropping.
I'll send a runner back to Bastionville with instructions to send some help this way. What else is bothering you? The leader of Carleone and I continued to discuss the state of the town as we walked ahead of the caravan down Main Street. And by the time the tail end of the procession had caught up to us, I'd already solved the majority of the issues Carlyle wanted to bring to my attention. Nameless eventually flew down to land on my shoulder once more, and the stunned look on the mayor's face made me chuckle. This is my pet dragon. He's harmless, and we call him Nameless.
It's a dragon! You've managed to hatch a dragon?
Yeah, it's a recent thing. Don't worry, he's totally under my control.
The dragon obeys your commands?
Carlyle shook his head with awe. Most of the time. I shrugged. He's like a puppy. We've had a few teachable moments.
I can only imagine the similarities to a dog,
Carlyle said, but the odd expression never left his face. The leaders of my holdings would get used to seeing Nameless around eventually, but I had to admit I liked shocking people. I was the dragon tamer, and word of Nameless would soon spread across my territories and beyond. Was I ready for everything that entailed? Hell yeah, I was. We enjoyed a nice dinner in the tavern with the mayor, and I couldn't help but remember the stark contrast between this moment and our first meeting. Now, the mayor of Carleone was once a drunk, and he'd spent the majority of his days nursing a drink in this very tavern. I'd changed all of that when I came to town, and I'd gotten the man back on his feet before I left. There weren't enough rooms at the inn to house all of my men, so the soldiers set up camp outside the city walls, but the horses were all taken to graze in the town's pastures. Once everyone was settled in for the night, my women and I retired to the inn for a good night's sleep. Nameless curled up on the foot of the bed, and we all passed out in contentment. It had been a long one, but we had another strenuous day of travel ahead. On the second day of our journey, I rode Goliath at the front of the procession, and I enjoyed the warm rays of the sun from atop the white stallion's back. Nameless spent more time in the air than on my shoulder, but I suspected it was because of his aversion to horses. The size difference alone was enough to have the fierce predator flying cautiously, but the stallion didn't pay the lizard beast any mind. Spring was definitely in the air, but I still expected to have a few random winter storms before the planting season began. I daydreamed about the future of my territory as I rode, and I envisioned the wealth and status I would acquire between now and then. I would be known around the world by many names, and my towns would be metropolises with thriving economies. I wasn't sure what other quests or adventures would come my way, but there was no doubt in my mind that I'd gather more loot and gear. Plus, I'd soon have a full-sized dragon to help watch over my kingdom. The future was bright for the god of time. I was already familiar with the landscape, but it was still nice to be out in the fresh air, on horseback, and I moved in unison with Goliath as he trotted down the road. I kept a close eye on Nameless as he explored further and further away, but he always came back to my shoulder when he began to get tired. Zenda wasn't as familiar with riding, since she'd grown up in the Zaboreal Isles, and everyone traveled by boat in the Eastern Ocean, but she spent several hours practicing her skills by my side, while Eva and Mahini remained in the carriage. Being pregnant couldn't be fun, so I tried to visit with them often, but they seemed content to let me ride up front for the majority of the day. Ivywood was a day's ride away from Carleone, but we had to take a more roundabout route to reach the wooded town before continuing on to Castle Bullard. I wouldn't be back in this area for a while, though, so it was important that I checked in on the little village. It was close to dusk when the evergreen timber walls came into view, and the watchers waved to us from the ramparts before the gates slowly opened. I rode into town with a parade of carriages and soldiers following in my wake, and it only took a moment for several curious faces to pop out of doorways. Everyone, strolling on the main road through town, stopped what they were doing to watch our arrival, and I waved at a few familiar faces before I pulled Goliath to a halt. I heard people whispering as they pointed to the tiny dragon flying overhead, but then Nameless landed on my shoulder, and everyone seemed to relax a little. Hackett, the leader of the town, was hobbling down the street on his cane by the time I dismounted my horse, and I gave the older man a small bow in greeting. The mayor of Ivywood stroked his long gray beard as he eyed the caravan behind me and the dragon on my shoulder, so I flashed him a wide smile. He was right to be cautious, but I wanted to set him at ease. "Oh, don't worry. The dragon's harmless, and most of my men will be camping just outside the city walls tonight." The leader eyed me for a moment longer, but then he nodded. His gaze remained on the little dragon, but he at least attempted to be subtle about it. He didn't seem as surprised as Carlyle had been, and I wondered if word had already traveled ahead of us. Gossip ran faster than carriages, it seemed.
"I would never turn away a chance to show His Grace hospitality, but I admit it is more than Ivywood could bear tonight."
"Oh, is everything okay?" I frowned.
"It could be worse, I suppose."
Hackett shook his head sadly.
"There's been a slew of deaths. I think there was a sick pig butchered, and everyone who ate the meat got sick."
There were people getting sick in Carleone, too. My frown deepened as I worried about the timing of my quest. If my holdings needed me, then my first priority would be to them. But I wanted to make my wife happy more than anything else in the world.
"It happens when populations rise. But I was curious if you knew how to tell if it was because of the meat or not."
I made a new save point before I said anything else, but I already knew diagnosing sick pigs was outside of my current knowledge. "I will do what I can," I said, and I gave the leader an apologetic smile. "I want the best for Ivywood, but I'm the god of time, not the god of pigs. I can't make any guarantees."
"That is all I can ask of you, Your Grace."
Hackett sighed, and his lips tugged into a sideways smile.
"But what can I do for you? You must be in need of a hot meal."
"Absolutely." I chuckled, and I followed the leader to the inn. The small town had no tavern, but the innkeeper cooked us a fantastic meal herself, and I couldn't stop complimenting the delicious food as I ate. Beth, the owner of the inn, blushed and fussed over the tablecloth, and she practically floated back to the kitchen after each trip to our table. Nameless was happy to get some raw meat for dinner, and the lizard-like creature chomped on his meal contentedly while we visited with Hackett and Beth. Hackett joined Mahini, Eva, Zenda, and I for dinner, but after we ate, I made the short trek to the apothecary shop to visit with old Zed. The herbalist immediately sent me on a trip to gather plants outside the town walls, but it was our normal routine, so I eagerly played along. Nameless accompanied me on the trip, and I talked to the little dragon as I hunted for the plants Zed needed. I liked the challenge to my herbal memory, and with my pregnant women, the more I knew about the healing arts, the better. I'd learned everything Zed, Theodora, and a random midwife from Edinburgh territory could teach me, but I also had a vial of healing waters from the secret cove in Araja, so I wasn't worried about any illnesses or injuries that could happen on our journey. The god of time always came well prepared. After my visit with Zed, I took a look at the pigs, but it was difficult for me to tell which were sick or not. I spent a few resets interrogating the farmers, and after I'd learned a little more about their livestock, I was able to help them figure out which couldn't be eaten. I made a new save point after all the sick pigs were butchered and the meat had been properly disposed of. Then I went to sleep beside my three gorgeous girls. But I was up early for the next day's travel. I wanted to be as efficient as possible with our time and resources, but it was still a long way to the desert, and we had a few more stops to make along the way. Nameless seemed eager to hit the road the next morning, and the lizard-like creature chirped excitedly as soon as my eyes opened. The chihuahua-sized beast stood on my chest, and his claws stretched reflexively, but I could tell he was trying not to press too hard. "Good morning, Nameless," I chuckled, and I pushed the dragon off me so I could roll out of bed. "Ready for some more flying time?" The lizard-like creature chirped, and I wondered how long it would be before we could communicate telepathically the way I had with the fire-breathing beast, Smeagol. It had been an odd sensation to hear the ancient voice in my head, but it had happened once before when I'd encountered a griffin, so it only took me a moment to adapt to the strange method of communication.
"Oh, it's so early,"
Eva complained in her typical sleepy fashion. The Duke's daughter was not an early riser, and pregnancy had only made that exponentially more difficult for her.
"Well, please."
"Certainly. I'll let you know when the caravan is ready to leave. You can sleep up until the last possible moment.
Plus, we can always nap in the carriage,"
Mahini pointed out in a cheerful tone.
"Maybe you can. I hate those things. The horses bounce the bile out of my stomach even faster. This stage won't last forever,"
Zenda said in a comforting manner.
"I read about the stages of pregnancy not long ago. The nausea should only last a few more weeks, but everyone is different." "That's true. I was only sick for the first few weeks, and then I began to feel better. Now I'm just big and clumsy."
"Hey, you're gorgeous in my eyes," I assured the desert goddess. "I love watching your body change and grow. It's like I get to know a whole new person while you're experiencing this."
"You are so kind,"
Mahini said, as tears sprang into her ice blue eyes, but she quickly blinked them away.
"Can I walk with you this morning?"
"Of course," I grinned. "We can spend some time together and get to know the soldiers a little better as we walk."
"They'll all be elite squad members after spending some one-on-one time with you. Or at least some of them will be."
"Yeah, I'm eager to get to know them all, but it won't take me long."
"Is everything easier for the God of Time?"
Zenda tilted her head to the side with curiosity.
"Or is there some magic I cannot see?"
Perhaps a little of both. I shrugged and gave the historian a mysterious smile. "Just watch. By the time we reach Valinwood, I'll know every soldier's name."
Impossible.
Zenda shook her head, but a playful smile tugged at her lips.
"For a man, anyway. I'm sure it is a simple matter for a god."
It took us 3 more days to reach Castle Bullard at the slow pace required by the caravan, so we got a chance to use our tents before we reached the desert. They were easy enough to assemble, but they required multiple hands, so it was a team effort to erect camp each night. Fortunately, we had more than enough helpers to make the job pass by swiftly, and then we spent the remainder of the evening getting to know the men accompanying us better. The gates of Castle Bullard were open to us when we arrived, and the guards waved at us as we passed by. Word had definitely spread of our journey east, and a crowd had already gathered in the streets by the time the first carriage entered the walls. They threw flower petals, and several townsfolk rushed up to present me with gifts. Many wanted to shake my hand, but if I submitted to every request, we'd never reach the castle. I proceeded through town at a stately pace, and I tried to give each group of people an equal amount of attention. I enjoyed the attention, but my stomach growled with the desire for dinner. Eventually, I began to merely wave as I passed by, but I still made more than one woman swoon with a flirtatious wink. Yep, my reputation preceded me. My father-in-law, the Duke of Bullard, met us at the entrance to the castle, and Eva rushed into her father's arms as soon as her carriage came to a halt. I gave the pair a moment to embrace before I approached, but I was greeted with a warm hug as well. It wasn't until after we pulled apart that Duke Bullard noticed the small dragon, and his eyes widened to the size of saucers immediately.
"What in Bash's name?"
The Duke nearly jumped out of his skin, and I reached an arm out to steady him.
"Is that a dragon?"
I resisted the urge to laugh at my name used in vain, but it was all part of being a god. "Don't worry, Pops. He's tame."
"Tame?"
Bullard's eyes flicked to me, and when he didn't sense any impending doom, he took a deep, steadying breath.
"You've tamed a dragon. What will you do next, I wonder?"
"Ah, the world is my oyster. Ah, what else was I supposed to do with it? He's too cute to kill. But I'm sure with my guidance he will end up being a protector instead of a predator."
"I have total faith in you,"
the Duke assured me, but his voice was still cautious.
"I just hope you know what you're doing."
"I'm the god of time." I shrugged. "I know everything."
"I am inclined to believe you. You've yet to be wrong."
"Smart man." I clapped him on the shoulder. Then my stomach growled loudly, and the Duke looked pointedly at my abdomen. I gave my father-in-law a wry smile and shrugged, and he gestured toward the castle.
"Come, I have a feast planned for you."
The Duke smiled as he led the way inside.
"I had planned on sitting with some tea while we catch up first, but I can move dinner up a bit."
"Sounds like an excellent plan. It's been a long day."
"I'm famished as well, father,"
Eva said as she bounced past her dad and down the hall.
"I know the way to the dining hall."
The Duke flashed me a quizzical look, but I just silently shrugged. It wasn't my place to explain her new ravenous appetite, and I didn't want to spoil the surprise before she was ready. It would be the Duke's first grandchild, and I had a feeling it would be a night filled with celebration. Eva would announce the news herself at the appropriate time, and I trusted my noble-born wife to be diplomatic about the information. I chatted with the Duke about the weather during our travels as we crossed the castle to the dining hall, but a short while later, we were all seated around the ornate table. The centerpiece was a massive turkey glistening with juices, and it was surrounded by an array of vegetables.
"Please dig in,"
the Duke insisted, after the servants had filled all of our glasses. "Thank you." I lifted my mug in a silent toast. "Everything looks delicious."
"You didn't have to go through all this trouble, father. It's not like I have not been eating well lately. Bash always provides for my every need."
"Oh, I know that, dear,"
Bullard tutted. But then he was distracted by the servants serving the food onto our plates, and when he looked up again, his gaze flicked to Zenda.
"Now, who is this new young lady accompanying you?"
"Duke Bullard, allow me to introduce you to Zenda Zuladai." I grinned wide as I tilted my head toward my newest woman. "Zenda is the daughter of High Priest Zadon, leader of the Zaboreal Isles."
"Oh, wonderful!"
Bullard gave Zenda a welcoming smile.
"It's lovely to meet you, Princess Zenda."
"Oh, no moniker is required, Your Grace,"
Zenda said as she tilted her head respectfully.
"My father is no king. It is an honor to visit your home. Thank you for your hospitality."
"Please, we are family."
Duke Bullard spread his hands.
"What's mine is yours. Well, make yourself at home, I insist."
"Yes, Your Grace."
Zenda blushed and nodded. We ate in silence for a while, but then Eva cleared her throat to get her father's attention, and I tensed as I prepared for the info dump the blonde bombshell was about to share. I kept the Duke in my peripheral vision as I flashed my wife an encouraging smile, and she took a deep breath.
"I'm pregnant."
Evangeline let out her breath in one big gust.
"There, I said it."
The Duke looked from my wife to me and back again.
"Pregnant?
What do you think about becoming a grandfather?"
Eva's eyes brimmed with tears, and we exchanged a loving smile across the table.
This is amazing!
The Duke gasped and clapped his hands.
Oh, so soon after your marriage! What a blessing!
I was surprised myself, but now I'm thrilled at the idea of bringing a baby into this world. It's become a much nicer place since Bash arrived.
Oh, why, you two are going to make wonderful parents.
The Duke gushed, and he clasped both of our hands warmly.
Well, this deserves a toast!
We all lifted our glasses, and as I scanned over the faces sitting around the table, I couldn't be happier. But I did wish I had all of my women with me. I'd have to blip them into town next time.
To the happy couple,
the Duke said as he lifted his glass.
And to the whole family.
We mirrored his sentiment before we sipped, and then the conversation turned to planning for the little one's arrival. The Duke promised to supply us with anything we might need, and I soon began to picture the lavish nursery the baby would have. The Duke of Bullard walked us to our wing of the castle, and he gave Eva another warm hug before we retired for the night. We were only staying one night with him, so I knew he was anxious to soak up every last minute with his daughter.
Good night, Your Grace,
the Duke said as he gave me a farewell bow.
I won't tarry you for time in the morning, since I know you still have quite a ways to go. Safe travels, and I will keep you in my thoughts.
Thanks, Pops, I grinned. We'll be back safe and sound before you know it, I promise. Once he left, the four of us piled into bed with tired groans, but the ladies surprised me with a group blowjob that had me falling asleep immediately after I climaxed. I made a new save point as we left Castle Bullard the next day, and Nameless launched from my shoulder into the air as soon as we rode past the city walls. The little lizard-like creature spun and twisted through somersaults before he pushed toward the east, but he flapped his wings hard enough to easily outpace us. It took us several more days to travel to Valenwood, and I alternated between riding Goliath and sitting in the carriage with my women. Mahini seemed to grow even more emotional with each passing day, but when I asked her what was wrong, she just hugged me tightly. I had a feeling not even she could explain why she was feeling a certain way, so I just needed to be as patient as possible. Zenda took notes about the topography as we traveled, and the historian even began to sketch detailed maps of the area surrounding the road. Eva read through some of the Zaborian's books, and the two girls discussed various points found within the pages for hours.
How much further until the next bed?
Eva grumbled as we piled into our sleeping rolls.
Oh, we should arrive either tomorrow or the day after.
I kissed her sweetly on the cheek. But don't worry, my love, there'll be lots of nights spent in the tent after that.
The deserts can be harsh,
Mahini warned for the millionth time.
I want to make sure we restock our supplies in Valenwood.
We'll have plenty of chances to restock along the way before we hit the desert.
Don't worry about anything except you and the baby. I'll handle everything.
You are so kind.
Mahini began to sob, so I automatically opened my arms for her to roll into.
Thank you for everything, husband.
I patted her back and rubbed her hair until her sobs calmed down, and then I pressed kisses all over her face until she was smiling once more. She gazed up at me with adoration in her ice-blue eyes, and my heart swelled with love for the amazing woman I got to call my wife. We all exchanged words of love as we fell asleep, and I sighed peacefully as my eyes closed. We managed to make it to Valenwood by sunset the next day, and the cheers from the soldiers signaled the relief everyone felt at the sight. I wondered how the rookies would handle the desert since they were so eager for civilization after just a few days, but I supposed they would gain experience with time. There would be room in town to give every man in the entourage a nice bed, but it would cost us a hefty sum if the king didn't cover the price. Ryandale sent men ahead to make the arrangements as the carriages pulled slowly through the gates, but another parade of people awaited us. The city of Valenwood was laid out in a wagon wheel design, so we had to go through the heart of town in order to reach the palace, and I got the chance to wave at thousands of people.
The women were gifted with bouquets and chocolates, and the horses were given carrots and apples, but I received more than one gift of jewelry or cutlery. Soldiers gathered the items from me after I thanked each person, but we crawled through town at a snail's pace.
"Hello, Valinwood!" I called from Goliath's back. "The God of Time is back!"
AC/DC's Back in Black played in my head as cheers echoed my words, and the din of the crowd was so loud I couldn't hear myself think. But I waded through the hordes of people on my horse so they could all reach out and touch me. We reached the palace a short while later, and the king came out to greet us on the doorstep. King Frederick wore a long, flowing white robe trimmed with fur, and the crown on his head glimmered in the fading sunlight. A line of trumpeters stepped out and heralded our meeting, and I grinned as I waited for the music to stop.
"Greetings, Your Grace,"
the king said with a regal air once the trumpets ceased.
"Welcome back to Valinwood."
"Your Majesty," I said with a bow of my head. "A pleasure, as always. The city's alive today. I take it word of my arrival spread into the common areas?"
"That is how it is."
King Frederick laughed, but then he turned to my women.
"It's lovely to welcome the duchesses and the princess back to Valinwood as well. I have a surprise in store I think you ladies will enjoy."
My curiosity was piqued, but I let the king keep his surprise a secret for the moment. We followed him inside, but he didn't keep us long, and we soon went to our usual wing of the palace to freshen up for dinner. Since we were dining with royalty, we all put on our best clothes, and I was grateful once again for Bellona's talents. The seamstress had made me a shirt and a vest that fit like a glove, and the taper accentuated the narrowness of my hips while emphasizing the broadness of my shoulders. I struck a Superman pose in the mirror, and I heard giggles from the women behind me. Then I turned to see them all dressed in their finest outfits, and my mouth watered at the sight of their beauty. Mahini's simple black gown billowed and hid the shape of her stomach, but her pregnancy-enhanced boobs were pushed out to create a deep line of cleavage. Evangeline wore a sparkling gold number that was slid up one leg, and I spied a set of throwing knives strapped to her thighs. Zenda's pale turquoise robes were trimmed with silver ribbon, but the sleeves were little more than long strands hanging from her shoulders.
"Oh, you're gorgeous," I breathed, and my eyes must have exploded into hearts.
All three of you are absolutely breathtaking. The king might have a heart attack."
"He'd die a happy man, then,"
Eva countered with a mischievous wink. "Let's not rush it, but we'll give him a nice view for the evening. He can spend a night envying the God of Time like the rest of the world, right?" When we arrived in the dining hall, however, loud music greeted our ears, and I quickly discovered a dance of sorts. A herald announced our arrival, and everyone turned to either applaud or bow. I waved to the crowd, but my eyebrows furrowed as I searched for the king. I'd expected dinner, but not a party. It was quite the nice surprise. We moved through the crowd toward the throne, and King Frederick leapt to his feet to cross the distance to me. The smile on his face showed how pleased he was with himself over this little surprise, and I couldn't help but chuckle.
"Ha! Welcome to the Gala of the Gods!"
King Fred declared, and he wrapped an arm around my shoulders to lead me back into the crowd.
"It is time to dance, Bash!"
"Thanks, Your Majesty. I was definitely not expecting this. It'll be nice to have some fun before we leave for the desert. Not sure how many galas they throw down in the south."
"You're traveling to the desert?"
King Fred arched one eyebrow.
"I hope you brought plenty of men for backup. The south is not a safe place right now."
"Do you have any connections I could count on to smooth things over?"
"No, unfortunately."
The king shook his head.
"Soyal isn't allied with a single tribe of the south, and they aren't known for their friendliness. I have no way of helping you once you cross the boundary of my realm."
"I can handle myself, but thanks." I grinned.
So, there's trouble in the desert, huh? Anything you can tell me?
I do have some spies gathering information,
the king allowed, but he paused to greet one of the passing nobles.
I feel it is necessary to stay up to date on the realms sharing my borders, don't you?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I agreed. I shook a few hands and stopped to talk to a couple of people that pulled me away, but then I rejoined the king and gave him a pointed look. Anything you can tell me could only help. I know the Kotar Desert is occupied by various tribes, but little else is known about the region.
True, true. But not many know there's a new power rising in the south who seeks to unite the tribes. His methods are bloody and questionable, but effective. Be warned, you may have enemies before you even arrive.
The tribes have never united before,
Zenda said from behind me in a thoughtful voice.
Do you really think this new power is capable of such a thing? My people do not bow,
Mahini insisted in a vehement tone, and I reached over to squeeze her hand.
The whispers say he has already conquered more than one rogue tribe,
the king informed us, but then he lowered his voice.
He calls himself the King of Kotar. It's ridiculous. The entire desert cannot be ruled by one man.
I thought over the king's warning throughout the rest of the night, but I tried to give plenty of attention to dancing with the ladies. I was requested by the noble women attending the party as well, so I spent more time on the dance floor than I did mingling with the nobles of Valinwood. I was still eager for bed by the time the party ended, and I stretched out across the massive king-sized bed as my women snuggled in around me. The next morning, we departed for the south. We would pass through Edinburgh territory and speak to the new duke, but then we would be crossing the border of Soreal into the Kotar Desert. My heart pounded with excitement as I mounted Goliath. The desert should be warned about the god of time, not the other way around.